Hi, my name is Susan. I'm from Westwood. I'm currently reading a book called The Vacationers by Emma Straub. I just started it, so I don't know a lot about it, but I chose it because it takes place on the beach, which I need right now.
I'm Julia Heider from Madeira. I'm the co-author of Badass Civil War Beards, and I just started reading Amy Poehler's new book, Yes Please. It's sort of a memoir, sort of all over the place. She brings in different letters and lots of pictures, so it's sort of different than any other memoir of a comedian that I've read, and like as opposed to Tina Fey or Mindy Kaling or something like that. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Hello, I'm Amber from Pleasant Ridge. Currently, I am reading The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. This book is an epic fantasy novel. It is about a country torn by war that has been going on for several years, and everyone's sort of starting to wonder why they're fighting the war, and they're kind of trying to figure out what the war is really about. It's really interesting because it's a 1,000-page book, and it is the first of 10 planned in the series, so there's a lot to read. It's a big investment, but it's worth it. So far, I'm almost finished with it right now. It's been taking me a few weeks, but it's a really great book, and I can't wait to read more by Brandon Sanderson.
I'm Anna Heider from Madeira. And right now I'm reading Founding Mothers by Kogi Roberts because I'm a total history nerd and read something about ladies for once.
To Shannon Levin, I'm reading two books right now. I have one that's due on Tuesday for our book club, which is House in the Sky. I think her last name is Lyndhurst, maybe. It's a memoir of the lady who was in Sierra Leone captive for a while. And then also Mortal Arts, which I picked up here 2 years ago. I think her name's Ann Huber. She wrote The Anatomist Wife. I bought that here just because I had talked to her and I loved it. So then I just continue to pick up her books. They're really good. I'm about halfway through that, and I love that. That's a really good one, too. It's more of a like historical mystery romance.
Hello, I'm Kaylee from College Hill. And right now I'm reading Persuasion by Jane Austen. I really like this book. It's not the first time I've read it. And I really feel like, as far as Jane Austen's works go, it's really underappreciated. It's a very subtle love story, and it always gets me every time.
Hello, I'm Matt Bolton from Madeira. I'm reading Marvel Comics, The Untold Story. I forget the author. The book's great. It's a sort of a walk through the behind the scenes of all of the great iconic comics that I was reading when I was 11 or 12 years old, and here's the politics and the scheming behind how they came out. I haven't. It brings back a lot of memories. It's a great take on it.
My name is Dennis. I live in Over the Rhine. I am currently reading a biography of Gustav Mahler, written by Bruno Walter, who was a lifelong friend of his. In order to understand Mahler's complexity, you have to understand Mahler himself. And I think this is probably one of the best books I've read about Mahler and why the music was so phenomenal.
Thanks for listening to The Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along. And glad to have in the studio with me Robert Ernest Miller. He is the author of World War II Cincinnati, From the Front Lines to the Home Front. It's a book on the History Press, just released, available in bookstores now. And with Veterans Day just around the corner, I thought it'd be the perfect time for Bob to come in and talk about World War II Cincinnati. Welcome to The Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks so much, Mark.
I was fascinated as I read World War II Cincinnati, mainly at the beginning, setting the stage for what Cincinnati was like in 1940, while Germany was wreaking havoc in Europe, before America got into the war after Pearl Harbor in 1941. This was an in-between period, and it seems that things were quite divided in Cincinnati at that time in 1940 when it came to whether to get into the war or stay out of the war.
This is probably the most intriguing part of the story for me. the storyline for most people with World War II and the United States begins with December 7th, 1941, the attack on Pearl Harbor. And so much of the fun part of the story, in my opinion, happens before that, because the farther you dig into the record, you realize that Cincinnati, like the rest of the country, was extremely divided in public opinion. A vocal minority was adamantly opposed at almost all costs to any kind of participation in Europe's war. And on the other end of the spectrum was an adamant minority that was very much in favor of, in some cases, armed intervention before Pearl Harbor. So Cincinnatians reflected that division.
And this was a hotbed, I learned, a fertile ground for critics of President Roosevelt, too.
Absolutely. and that might be the one exception. I've been researching this topic for a long time now, for 20-plus years. And when you take a national perspective, the story goes like in a certain direction where people pull together. But there is a persistent attitude, even after we enter the war, where people stick to their guns. The 1940 election, in fact, does go for Franklin Roosevelt, but there's this kind of lingering expression of, you know, holding on to the opposing viewpoint for Republican views.
This was despite all the happenings around the New Deal, and well, actually, the New Deal was part of the reason that
right.
there were people that didn't like Roosevelt, but it was interesting how prosperous Cincinnati was at the time, too, despite this division along these lines of whether to get in the war or not in the war. I found it intriguing how you described the city there in 1940, not only the political viewpoints, but also the city itself. And it was a fairly prosperous metropolis.
Absolutely. It's a Midwestern city. The long answer for Cincinnati's success is, and we forget about, I think, the level of prosperity that Cincinnati had, but we were very much a 19th century city that had its peak more or less around the time of the Civil War. When railroads came in, Chicago kind of stole our thunder, and not that we've been in the shadow of that larger city, but we just play a different role as a Midwestern city.
I'm speaking with Bob Miller, Robert Ernest Miller, the author of World War II Cincinnati, From the Front Lines to the Home Front, printed by History Press, the History Press, I should say. And I wanted you to explain how you came around to studying World War II, because you mentioned you've done this for a couple of decades. You've worked on the great exhibit at the Cincinnati Museum Center about Cincinnati going to war. How did you go down this career path studying World War II?
It is kind of a long, indirect path, but I started working in graduate school, not at all having nothing to do with World War II. It was actually an interest in civilian defense policies at the federal level. And it was started in the 1950s, and my mentor at the time, Roger Daniels, was teaching a graduate seminar about the age of Roosevelt. And he kind of gently redirected my efforts towards the war years. He said, no one's really done a study of the federal civil defense policies during the war years. So I said, well, okay. You know, and I started basically doing the research from a local level. And my understanding of everything that Cincinnati did and experienced during the 40s, during the war years, pretty much reflected the national experience. You know, so I was able to take more or less a case study of Cincinnati and then turn it into a home front, you know, study of an agency's efforts during World War II. That's where it began. And right when I was finishing my PhD, I got the opportunity to work on the museum exhibit for the Union Terminal, and that was a great experience.
Well, you've written a couple of other books. Was this book, World War II Cincinnati, just further outgrowth of the books you had written previously?
More or less. Every time I got done with sort of an experience, I turned my attention to writing, you know, a lot of the text for the museum exhibit. And then there was a lull in which I thought, like, how many stories didn't get told. And
yes.
the first World War II book I did, Cincinnati, the World War II Years, gave me an opportunity to look at photographs mostly that were in the holding exclusively of the museum center. And a lot of these photos were unprocessed, you know, and as far as I know, still remain so to this day. So that was quite an opportunity. And even after I did that book, I thought, what's left? And I kept thinking, this is such an intriguing story. And with this book, what I really wanted to do, and I think in terms of the new research that I brought to it, was to go down into what I would think is almost like the neighborhood level or, you know, the church parish level. I've did some pretty intensive research in the Archdiocese archives at the parish level, which I didn't even really know existed before I did this book.
Well, I love how you put in some quotes from the University of Cincinnati News Record, the student newspaper at the time, and how their take on what was happening both before Pearl Harbor and after, and how attitudes changed. And we talked about the divisiveness of the city between the pro-interventionist and the anti-interventionist. But once December 7th, 1941 happened, right. Pearl Harbor, that shock, everybody was on the same page.
Pretty much. And the editorials of the News Record, you could almost like feel like they were trying so hard to be impartial and balanced in their views, and anything goes, and we'll tolerate to a degree any opinion. But like you said, after Pearl Harbor, they're like, we're behind this effort, you know, 100%.
Well, speaking of Pearl Harbor Day, you shared the story of the Andrews sisters who were in town to perform. What they had two concerts. They just were going wall to wall that weekend, and that Sunday morning they
were blowing the doors off apparently at the Schubert Theater. And you know, that was kind of a neat story because as a young person, I remember being able to go to a couple of those shows before it closed down. I guess in the 70s, probably it was. But the Andrews sisters were there, and they were, you know, one of many big name acts coming through town. So they were attracting large crowds. Their manager said, keep it up, girls. You know, you're going to break a weekend theater record. And, you know, the story is that they were coming in, walking from their hotel on Sunday, December 7th, and clueless about they had not heard the events of the day. And must have just been like a ghost town. You know, nobody was, the previous shows, people were clamoring, waiting in lines to buy their tickets. And one of the girls said, no one's here. What's up with that? And they go in, and that's, of course, when they hear the story. And that was really true. Word of mouth was a way that people were getting the news of the day back then.
Yeah, no 24-hour news cycle.
Exactly.
And you point out in the book, it was actually weeks before a lot of Americans knew the extent of what had happened at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, absolutely. No question. Yeah. Years ago, I did an article about the death of Franklin Roosevelt, which, of course, occurs in the spring of 1945. And the same, even after America was at war and had an Office of War Information and a concerted effort to, we'll say, control the narrative, as we like to say in today's parlance. But even at that point, when people heard about the death of their president, a lot of people remembered that they heard the information relayed from another person rather than from a news source.
How did Cincinnati change when war was declared? What did you find to be the biggest change in Cincinnati? I think in the book, at least from my perception, it was going from that consumer goods to defense goods for the most part.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Franklin Roosevelt issues an edict in January 1942 that halts automobile production. I can't think of a more dramatic example that there are no new cars after January of 1942. So in a myriad of ways, and this is how the experience of this generation is just so just markedly and entirely different, categorically different from our experience of, you know, what we have is like more or less perpetual war. And it's a different kind of challenge. But for that generation in the 1940s, it affected, you know, their ability, where they worked, perhaps where they lived even. You know, it affected their shopping hours, their school hours. What I learned is that the Archdiocese actually came up with the innovation of the midnight mass to accommodate, you know, war workers so that they could attend certs on a more regular basis.
Well, defense contracts came to Cincinnati due to its thriving machine tool industry. A lot of
certainly that was one of the big pillars of strength for us.
And aeronautics, too. The Wright Aeronautical Plant the Wright Aeronautical Corporation
yes.
had a plant in Lockland.
That's right. The same footprint, basically, that GE occupies today. So.
But that was not the only thing that Cincinnati was doing because it was considered, I think I read that what Cincinnati was designated one of the nation's 33 most strategic cities
Absolutely.
In World War II and had to be protected. So earlier in the early in the war, we were very concerned about being the target for bombs.
It's almost hard to imagine in the world we live in, and we, you know, respond to threats in the 21st century for sure, but it's almost hard to imagine in the 1940s that Americans were that preoccupied and that concerned. But in fact, they were. You know, people patrolled the streets. The city officials made sure that we blacked out every conceivable source of illumination in the city and patted themselves on the back when they finally managed to do that. So these kinds of precautions went on for the first half of the war. And then the reality more or less set in that the Allies, including the United States, had, you know, launched a successful enough counteroffensive that the fear of those sorts of attacks had more or less diminished.
Well, in your book, World War II, Cincinnati from the Front Lines to the Home Front, you really look in depth at what changes came around, how Cincinnati grew up as a city, how it faced its challenges. You talk about the changing role of women due to World War II here in the area, the role that colleges played and mm-hmm. so much. But in your many years of research, what really stuck out about Cincinnati in World War II in your mind? What was most surprising to you as the author of this book?
Well, I think it transforms the way people think of themselves as Americans. World War II for me is and always will be, in my lifetime, a transformative event, you know, on a local scale, on a national scale, on a global scale. I mean, if you think about where we are as a culture and as a country coming out of World War II versus the previous global conflict, we were brand new to, you know, on the stage, the world stage in terms of world leadership, and we're more or less frightened about the prospect of remaining in that position of leadership and ran away from, you know, the League of Nations. 1945, or before 1945, the United States is really pushing the limit in terms of the United Nations and exhibiting, you know, not just from a leadership, but down to ordinary people that we are a different kind of nation in the world.
Robert Ernest Miller, the author of World War II Cincinnati, From the Front Lines to the Home Front. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. Bob will be at the main branch of the Public Library of Cincinnati in Hamilton County on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th at 2 o'clock for a presentation. You can learn more about that through our website, wvxu.org. Thank you, Bob, for being here today.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun, Mark.
You've been listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Technical director is Bruce Ellis. The club's web guru is Jim Nolan. Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer. And Rick Andres is music director and segment engineer. Rick, what are you reading?
I'm reading Matthew Modine's Full Metal Jacket Diary. It was originally released as a special edition that was actually in a Full Metal Jacket bookcase. But it's just been re-released as a very stunning app for the iPad. And it's his diary, you know, during the making of Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. And there's pictures included, and it's just some really awesome insight into, you know, one of Stanley Kubrick's best films.
Thanks, Rick. And I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Next time, NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. You'll hear tips and sage wisdom from founder Chris Beatty as folks answer the challenge to write 50,000 words in 30 days. Add to that a spirit sommelier with whiskey distilled and former Cincinnati professor Brock Clark's new novel, The Happiest People in the World, and let the good times roll. Laissez les bon temps rouler. I hope you'll tune in next Saturday morning for the Book Club at 91.7. It's Weekend Edition coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.